Episode 176 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded March 22nd, 2018. A very special episode. Guys, we're all going to find out that you shouldn't go to the bike shop this week.
Oh, or maybe, oh my God! I can't believe you know that episode too,
Mike. You know what we're talking about, right?
I have no idea.
Different Strokes.
Yeah. The very
Shit! Wow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty dark reference, man.
Yeah. That's even worse than saying you're going to burn the apartment building down with your Kim set.
That one, I don't know.
That's Webster.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he gets a chemistry set and they tell him he can't play with it. And then he, sneaks the chemistry set back out and plays with it and burns their friggin' apartment down.
Wow, that's dark for Webster. Yeah. Webster was a darker show than I remember.
Those shows got dark. The one I remember is when Arnold, on Different Strokes, was always hanging by this like rack in his room. And it was played for laughs, but then you realize he's doing that because he wants to get taller.
That was actually just Gary Coleman. That was a shot of his trailer.
Yeah, no, and he was 35 years old at the time.
That show got dark when Arnold's parents didn't give him the meds he needed to finish puberty.
Very true.
Oh, but the show also got kind of dark. Remember when Mrs. Z pulled down a helicopter with her bare hands?
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was the same episode where the acid rain turned the sister's hair green, I think.
Yep. Yeah. Anyway.
Classic sitcoms, guys.
No one listening to the show has any idea what we're talking about.
Now, people like the 80s, right? Ready Player One's coming out.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
I heard Ready Player One is just 80s sitcom references. That it's all it's just Night Court and,
yeah.
Oh, man. And Cheers.
The trailer doesn't give you the sense of what the movie's actually about.
Yeah. Over the Hill and Norm's there.
The surprise cameo is Marcia Warfield.
Yes. But actually, this is a very special episode because the shows we're discussing in general have sort of an uplifting message, or it's the final season of a show that is pretty dark, but it's kind of an uplifting ending. So we decided it's a very special episode of the TV Dudes, and we are the TV Dudes.
Yeah, these shows have all the feels.
And I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And with us this time is a special guest.
Hey guys, I'm Mike.
That's right. We've named our ciders now.
This is Mike Moody, the head honcho here at Permanent Record Studios.
I am your boss. I'm your boss. Let's make this go well or you're fired.
And so before we get started, I want to remind you that if you would like to support us, you can go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and post about what you'd like about the show. We will read those reviews on the air no matter what you write. Anything. And also, if you want to support us monetarily, which we love, you can go to Patreon at patreon.com/TVDudes and throw us a buck, throw us a couple bucks. And in exchange, you will get exclusive content every week. Not for the last couple weeks, because it's been crazy here. But this week, there will be a special Patreon episode.
Yes.
In which we discuss usually non-TV related topics. We've talked about food and politics and I believe at one point we did a raffle of what was the best superpower to have.
Yeah, y'all've done some fun game ones. Yeah. We've also just ranted.
That's happened too. We don't know what's going to happen this week. It could be anything. And you can also support us and support our fellow podcasters by checking out the Permanent Record Network. And that is at permanentrcrd.com.
Permanentrcrd.com.
Thank you. And we've got a variety of shows over there. Mike, what are some of the shows on Permanent Record?
Let's see. We got FemTV at FemTV.com with Melissa Giramonte. She interviews a bunch of awesome women who work in television. This Is Us with Key and Clyde. They talk about your favorite show, This Is Us.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that show.
You've all seen it.
Yeah. Really?
No.
Okay.
Not a stitch. Not a minute.
I was like, not your dark heart, my friend. Let's see. Star Trek Discovery Pod. If you're just catching up on Star Trek Discovery, we have a great show about that. If you're watching Mr. Robot, check out Mr. Robot O, all about Mr. Robot. Probably a few other shows out there. I think Les has one, don't you?
Yeah. The Good Die Young, which is on hiatus right now until I hit a critical mass of interviews for the next show to drop.
Yeah, Les has been on a ton of interviews, by the way. So if you guys are just listening to us every week, make sure and check out, because Les has been interviewing. Who are some of the folks you've interviewed recently?
See, so every Monday now we have interviews. I feel like confident I can say that because I've got interviews booked out for the next couple of months.
Yeah.
John Ross Bowie, Colton Dunn, Donalyn Chaplin or Champlin from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah.
We've got several in the works. I never want to announce anybody that I haven't actually recorded the freaking thing.
Isn't he an excellent interviewer? Isn't he good?
Yeah, Les is great at it. He's so much better than I am at this job. And he actually enjoys it, whereas for me, it was always stressful.
Yeah, did you study journalism at all or anything?
No, really? I have very limited social contact. And so it works out great to have research one person and go, all right, what is the one 20-minute conversation that I want to have with this person? And then just have that, hang the phone up, and then be alone for the rest of the day. It's great.
Yeah, that's a good strategy.
All right, so we're going to talk about some news for the week. There's not a ton, but some interesting stuff. So Black Mirror Season 5 has apparently already begun filming.
Yeah.
Which is good news. We don't know when it's coming out, but there is more Black Mirror on the way.
I love Black Mirror.
By already began filming Black Mirror, they just mean CCTV, right?
Yeah. They're just watching what happens right
like
now.
Like YouTube. YouTube was the beginning of Black Mirror Season 5 when they launched it years ago.
They're just DVRing C-SPAN right now.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wait, do you guys think the presidency is actually just a Black Mirror episode? Are we all in some weird social experiment?
We're like in that 80s or 90s movie where John Ritter got sucked into the TV.
Do you know how happy... Oh, child. Stay tuned.
Problem child. Stay tuned, yeah.
Yeah, do you know how happy I would be if somebody came around right now with a waiver?
Oh, yeah.
And it sounded like, oh, God, this is all on camera? Thank you.
God. Yeah, thank you. I'd be so happy.
Worst show ever.
Oh, well, I don't know. The Push is still pretty bad on Netflix.
And
that's got to be the worst thing I've ever fucking seen.
The entire Monty Python catalog is coming to Netflix.
What?
I thought it was just Flying Circus or just some of the...
The entire catalog.
Including movies?
Flying Circus from 1969 to 1974, Holy Grail, Life of Brian, everything.
Shit.
Oh, may have to get weirdly completist with this and like...
Now, it's going to hit Canada and the UK on April 15th. That's fair. They gave us Monty Python. They should get it back first. we will get it later this year. But yeah, I own a lot of money. I think I own everything Monty Python on DVD.
But just to have it streamable, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I could go dig out Flying Circus and watch it. But I was thinking that today of like, yeah, but to just bored go, hey, let's watch some random Python.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, probably good fodder for TV Dude's Patreons coming up.
That's true. We don't usually cover TV, but we're not going to cover that in the basics of the regular show.
Or the movies, maybe.
Or the movies, yeah.
Do it. I'm your boss.
Also, this would be perfect for that Simpsons World treatment. You know, the FX Simpsons World that has like thematic breakdowns and just if you could break down the sketches and stuff so you'd like see, here are all the sketches where they dress up as women. Here are all the sketches, the dead parrot sketch would be, singled out, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Here's all the Palin sketches. Here's all the Graham Chapman sketches. Yeah.
That's not a thing that Netflix does, but maybe someday.
Side note Python news from this past week. Ellen Burstyn on Twitter, I believe it's Ellen Burstyn. I guess Terry Gilliam did a long rambling interview where he bashed the Me Too movement.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
And she just took to Twitter and very kind of tersely said, hey, if there's anybody that ought to maybe stay quiet about that, you should shut the fuck up.
It was Ellen Barkin.
Ellen Barkin. I'm sorry, Ellen
Barkin.
Ellen Burstyn.
She said,
totally different actress. Ellen Barkin.
She said, she said, don't get in an elevator with
Terry
Gilliam.
Oh, shit. Yes. And so, that was because I think Annabella Sciorri was like, you aren't usually tight-lipped about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So what gives? And she just said, suffice to say my hard-won lesson, don't get in an elevator alone with Terry Gilliam.
Yikes.
So that's rough.
Which, of course, sparked an entire new discussion on my Facebook feed about like whether you stop loving someone's entire... I had to explain again to someone that no, it doesn't mean blanket burn all their shit, but it does mean that I have to re-review everything I watch by them from now on. And sometimes that makes it so not fun that I stop watching their shit forever.
Yeah.
That guy's never going to get that Don Quixote movie made now.
Yeah, it's definitely. That's a stumbling block.
I'm not going to watch it the same.
So close.
It colors how I watch these things.
It was so close to happening without the stumbling block.
There'll be a sweet documentary about how it went.
Sad news. Bozo the Clown performer Frank Avrick died at 89. But 89 is a good run for a professional clown.
Yeah. I mean, the guy lived a long, good life. He was on TV for most of it. He brought you know, happiness to children, including me when I was a kid. I watched him on
the Bozo the Clown
WGN.
Yeah. Everybody hates clowns, but everybody loves Bozo.
Right. It's weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He was not threatening or scary somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and Cookie. Yeah,
Cookie,
I loved that show.
Yeah. I don't know if it was his voice or just his demeanor, but he was very approachable, really fun to watch. And I hate fucking clowns.
Yeah, of course. Don't fuck clowns.
No?
No.
No. Oh,
no.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to hate fuck clowns, man. That's
right, only do it romantically with love.
Yes, with love.
You guys watch that show, Great News?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Remember when I think she's on a dating app and she gets a text from a guy dressed up as the It Clown and it says DTF, down to float?
Yes.
Some of my favorite gags from that show.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I actually have a friend that got a, she took a screenshot of it. It was on her Tinder. It was a dude in overalls and clown makeup with a large butcher knife and a balloon. And like, it had to be tongue in cheek, but we all just sat back and were like, yeah, but someone one time is going to swipe right and it's going to be his soulmate in one move.
Yeah, that's like, true. He's not net fishing. He's
narrowed
he knows exactly what he wants.
So focused that, yeah, when someone does swipe right, it's love.
I want someone who finds this funny.
Yes.
He's niching down.
Yes.
Last bit of news we have, and this is exciting to me, Fargo season 4 is confirmed and it will be a period piece.
Okay.
It is going to be... I don't know if we know what period. He just says it's a period piece.
Are there any creative changes?
Noah Hawley's still doing it.
Okay.
So
we're happy.
Yeah. Scott Buck is now.
Oh, oh no.
God. Oh.
Burn the motherfucker down.
Yeah.
Well, he'll
Brian
do it for
K.
me.
Bonds the...
I'm excited to see Fargo back, and Legion is starting up very soon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So all hail Noah Hawley. All right, we'll be back in just a moment with our discussion of Rise, Timeless, Love, and Queer Eye. All right, gentlemen, let's start off with a show that I'm really curious to hear what you thought of, NBC's Rise.
I was pleasantly surprised by this show. I'm a fan of Kadams.
Yeah.
Jason Kadams, Friday Night
Lights.
Friday Lights
and Parenthood.
Parenthood. I was a huge fan of those shows. I was not looking forward to this show. The marketing campaign didn't grab me. Josh Radnor is not a performer who I enjoy. That's his name, right?
Yep,
Josh Radnor.
He surprised me. I really liked him in this show.
He's much better here than he is as awful human being Ted Mosby.
Maybe it was just my expectations were pretty low.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it.
I feel like frequently the central character of a sitcom has to be the void, like just the dullest blank.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted Mosby is the dullest thing about How I Met Your Mother.
Like, yeah.
It's part of how that show came up off the rails towards that last season is because like the central thing you're supposed to give a shit about was the least interesting thing happening on the show.
Yeah.
There's a movie called, Arts. There's a movie he did called Liberal Arts.
Didn't he like write and direct it?
Yeah. That's with Elizabeth Olsen. That is surprisingly good. Like it's kind of got a Garden State kind of feel to it. It's funny, but more tender than I expected. And I didn't see any of the marketing for Rise at all. I had no idea what the hell this was about. So when it started, it was like, hey, it's dead.
oh, damn.
There's an astonishing amount about this show that I really liked.
Me too.
I didn't watch Friday Night Lights. I didn't watch Parenthood.
Huh.
I knew that this was the same person behind those. But the one – this feels like – anybody see Running on Empty, the Judd Hirsch – River Phoenix movie from the 80s.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Where they go... They turn,
he's
like,
a therapist, right?
Like his parents are on the... Turn out they're like Weather Underground and
they're on the lam.
And they get found out and taken away from him when he's in high school.
Mm-hmm.
It has this incredibly like gritty 80s, like the Poltergeist suburb, like just nothing flashy about it. You're not trying to lean into it. I don't know. I mean, I know that this thing's supposed to be set modern, but the rows of houses that they would show and the in Rise, like the kids' yards, the houses and everything, the way the makeup looked, the way the costumes looked, the shots, it had a lived-in, incredibly realistic feel to it. So that then when the camera would insist on doing this constant documentary push in,
yeah,
it felt lurid. Like it made it suddenly yeah. feel dirty. Like I should, I mean, like, and it's a pure camera style thing. It did not bother my wife at all. She didn't notice that at all. I was like, I almost turned it off twice because they wouldn't go get a fucking tripod.
I was used to that kind of stuff because that's kind of a staple it's with Jason Kadam's style, actually.
Yeah.
Like Friday Night Lights has a lot of that. It has that naturalistic look and feel like this mm-hmm. show does. Has mm-hmm. a very specific vibe. Like this takes place, it feels like a real place. These people are dressed like real people. It feels yeah. Real and gritty a lot more than, not really gritty, but it feels realistic, like very specific. And it's all filtered. It's a kind of a feel-good drama, family drama, but it's all kind of filtered through Jason Kadam's point of view and artistic sensibility, which is what we need in TV. That's what we talk about all the time on the yeah. show. Like people yeah. like Noah Hawley, you know, they can work with TV tropes, but they're filtered through their specific point of view. And that's what we get in Rise. We get a pretty standard network drama, but it's filtered through the point of view of this artist.
Well, I've become yeah. kind of an anti-network snob about yeah. dramas.
Oh, me too.
Like, I don't watch a lot of dramas, and the ones I'll give time to are pretty few and far between. I didn't watch Parenthood, mostly just because too much good TV. That's an amazing cast. Mm. And
it's good.
But I did love Friday Night Lights. And this feels almost like an answer to Friday Night Lights, because Friday Night Lights was about high school football. It was about more than that. It was about a small town community and how high school football was a lens through which to view it.
Yeah.
This is a sort of a broken industrial community, which is very timely, being viewed through the point of view of the drama department, the sort of notion of uplifting people who don't have a lot to go for right now, but you know, the notion of sort of higher art and what it all means is sort of important. And I think you find it interesting that drama is placed at odds with the sports department. They go out of their way to show that, no, if you want to have a Friday Night Lights type sports department, drama gets hosed.
Yeah, so in episode 2, the Jumbotron is going to be like $117,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, that's half the price it was yeah. going to be last year. It's
yeah.
like, what?
Yeah. I feel like the naturalism and everything that's working on this show, if they would back off any one facet, like if the makeup were a little more staged looking, or mm-hmm. if the sets looked a hair less dead on realistic, or if the camera wouldn't do the faux documentary who let this crew into their house weird found footage thing, it would leave it at like 90% heartfelt, mm-hmm. and I would love it. And instead, it rides along and like, this is amazing, this is great. Whoa, no, that's cheese ball. Like
it hits when, those when all the,
when, it does.
It's like when it, and I hate it because I feel like it's when everybody on set is doing their job at like 110%.
Yeah,
it's just that it's too fucking much every yeah. once in a while. Plus, there's a couple of, while I like a lot of the story set up in the first episode, That's like a day of rehearsal or two yeah, days of rehearsal.
A lot happened.
Like, what the shit? Like, all those kids who've
this
not...
show loves the montage.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
They're all doing the full exercises with no self-consciousness. I was like, yeah, there's no way. That and, to be spoilery, in the first episode, at the end of that, they set fire to
the
all those
the costumes
and everything.
For the cheesy show they don't want to do.
And I set yeah. back and went, fine, then we don't have a fucking theater department.
Yeah.
My high school would yeah. have a, like, A, you both get tickets. Every kid standing out there is suspended. When the principal walks out and sees, because I was thinking, well, maybe they don't find out about it and that's a plot. And then he walks out and I'm like, no, you two are fired. Your union yeah. reps will take this up. All you kids are fucking suspended.
Yeah.
All of that comes out of yeah. your pay. He does take it out of, not Mosby,
Josh Radner's
budget.
Lou Mazzucchelli.
Yeah, Mazzu.
But the thing is, that is also a hallmark of Kadam's. Kadam's lives in a world where, I mean, it's adjacent to the Sorkin world. It's where everything works out right if you're inspirational enough.
Like if
you mean it, you get away with big flashy stunts. And yeah. you either buy into that or you don't. I am skeptical of that kind of thing, but I'm also susceptible to that kind of thing. And Kadam's knows how to pull those heartstrings.
I think Mosby is writing that the performance really well between being this really inspirational teacher, but also being this kind of exasperated guy with his heart in his sleeve who's biting off more than he can chew.
And so, the kind of guy who's so sincere you kind of want to punch him in the face.
That too.
Like, I love the dynamic between him and Rosie Perez's Tracy Wolf, because she's like, I've been here. I've been doing the work. Yeah. And you jump in, all of a sudden, you're going to be the inspirational guy. I've been here laying the groundwork for everything you're doing. And I love the relationship that they develop between the two of them.
They're going to need to show me a little more about what exactly he clearly desperately needs something else in his life. Yeah. He doesn't have room for anything else, but he just needs something else in his life.
Yeah.
And I like they've talked about Radner's father having been an alcoholic, and their son is clearly an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And they're sending their son off to like boot camp, which they've never seen work.
That's something else that I find interesting. That's another Kadams thing, is that he gives the kids a deeper, more real, like, you're not going to see a teenage alcoholism plot in most shows. I mean, even edgy Fox dramas don't tend to do that. But I think that Kadams will go there, and he will treat it right, and will treat it with respect it deserves. I think that's really interesting.
It's easy for this kind of material, high school drama, to be played with a broad brush, and some of it is here.
Yeah.
You know, you do have tropes, but it's the details that matter. Like, the details make things feel less tropey in this. It feels it's not as deep as Friday Night Lights, but it has the potential to get there.
The kid, the football quarterback that he ropes into auditioning because of Kick and Rap.
Yeah.
They give you his sick mom so that it doubles down on the, like, you got to do what you love. Life is short, right?
Yeah.
And that still barely got me back to zero, because I sat through the whole first episode. Like, it got almost done, and my wife and I looked at each other and went, I don't really want to say this, but he's ruining that kid's life getting him into this fucking show, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, because straight up ruining that boy's life by getting him into this.
He's pulling his focus and drawing so much criticism towards
him. This is what he loves to do. Like, great. You know what? Hold on to that seed of that thing you love, because you have 5 to 10 years before your body's fucked and you can't play football anymore.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking,
and you'll have
too.
The whole rest of your life to be an amazing, dramatic actor.
Yeah. And look, here's the thing. I am in no way a huge football fan or a fan of sports culture versus drama culture. I was a drama nerd. I did musicals. I did all that stuff. So I'm with the drama kids. But that's exactly the train of thought I have.
Like, he was in Josh Radner's office because his grades suck.
Yeah.
That's how he got him onto the
thing. Right.
So you're not going on an academic scholarship. Like, you need football to go to college so that you can study acting. Because you know what you don't get to study acting at? Being a mechanic when you don't get to go to college.
Yeah. He surrendered a chance at playing college and then pro ball for the chance to go on a bunch of auditions in New York.
And may potentially screw his wide receiver out of college as well. Like, this is going to take down like 3 kids, won't go to college or something like that now.
Kid's going
to
end up working at that diner with the mother of the potential girlfriend character.
Right. Yes, yeah. Oh. there's a little bit, I mean, like I say, it's adjacent to the Sorkin reality where if you believe it hard enough, everything's going to work out. Yeah. But you have to be on board that train, because that is the one issue I have with Rise. I think it's a really good show. I will definitely stick with it for a little while.
I watched the second one. Like, I didn't watch them back to back like in a row. It was a little much all at once, but I'm enjoying it. But I got mad of like, I don't have kids, but I feel like you're ruining his life.
Yes, but I appreciate the economy of storytelling in this show. It kind of borders on, wow, the pacing's too fast and these dramatic payoffs are coming too fast. It borders on that, but it doesn't get there yet. Like, the pacing is pretty quick for a network drama about teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like and it makes room for some of those, like, moments where you want to sit in the scene and really see somebody's, like, emotional breakthrough come forward.
Yeah.
But it also moves at a swift pace, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
I like the girl who is used to being the leads.
Mm-hmm.
She's from The Path, and she was great on that. So I was glad to see that actress again. One thing in the first episode, I think it's when the principal looks at him and is like, there is no way that you were doing a play about all of this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's just not happening.
Yeah.
You're doing pirate. We already have the costumes. And it goes to, there's usually that feeling that we've all watched a shitload of TV. There's that feeling you have when it goes to black of like, I don't have to look at the clock. This show's done, right?
Yeah.
They're going to roll credits. that would have been the most baller move to me if it had gone to black and rolled the credits at the end of the pilot with like, oh, yeah, screw your dream of that show. And like after the whole rehearsal montage and everything, that like episode two would genuinely be Josh Radnor having to go back to the kids and like, new play.
Yeah.
And there was a – I can't remember exactly what it was in episode two, but there was a moment too of like 5 minutes before the end, you know, when they recently wrapped up all of the art plots from the hour.
Yeah.
But about 10 minutes before that, there's usually like a jaw drop moment. I feel like I'm going to keep watching these for like and scene. So, end it there.
So you need to, what you need to do is start turning the show off when you hit that moment.
Yes.
And then come back next week like, what happened here?
Or just pretend like the final act is the opening act of the next episode.
Yeah.
Previously on Arrested Development.
All right. Let's move on to a show that I know that Les and I are both very happy to have back, and that is NBC's Timeless.
Yes.
Which we have two episodes back of season two. Pretty big status quo change.
Yeah.
Mike, did you watch this one, season one?
I watched probably about half of the first season here and there, and I dropped out. Now, okay, I want to play the part of a listener who maybe is not into this show. Yeah. I know you guys like it.
Yeah.
Sell it to me.
Okay.
Do it.
I was not on board with the bring back Timeless, like like the art. Like, it's, I'm glad it's back, and I it's a time travel show, and I'm always happy to have those on
there.
You
didn't want to send capsules of something to network executives to make them bring the show back.
Yeah, it's a time travel show that was better than the other four or five time travel shows that I got in the last year. But I mean, I had a glut of time travel shows to choose from.
You got Travelers, you're good.
Yeah, but this was not my favorite. It made some choices early on that were perfectly fine and kept it in a formula of the week kind of vibe, when I really wanted them to seize on a couple of interesting threads that I thought, like, but no, you have that lane there. You've got to deal with that.
I think that's why I dropped out.
Yeah.
I think that is where I was too. I was sad to see it go, because I felt like they had really sort of ramped up at the end of season one. And I thought it was not so much I was sad to see season one go as I could see the potential for where the show would go in later seasons. And so far, I think they're realizing it. They're still a little too episodic for me. But it's kind of like when X-Files back in the day would do their mythology episodes, and you would start to see the bigger threads tying things together. Yeah. The Rittenhouse conspiracy, the notion that these guys have been manipulating time and planting sleeper agents throughout it.
Yeah, what they're doing in season two is different than what Rittenhouse was doing in season one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like it.
Also, the big twist at the end of season one, the revelation that Lucy's mother is a big player in Rittenhouse, and that – all this time, she's been sort of royalty in that organization, didn't know it. That's really thrown a nice, interesting wrench into the whole thing.
Yeah, it's kind of changed because now Lucy's mom is out on adventures.
Is that the status quo change you mentioned?
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Another big one is that they were working for Rittenhouse, essentially. They didn't know it.
But Rittenhouse had funded the entire project.
And so basically at the end of season one, the Rittenhouse like blows up their warehouse. They go underground. And now this Homeland Security lady they trust is working with them. But they're officially off the grid.
So you spend part of season one thinking that Rittenhouse is trying to steal their time machine from them? Like, no. You're stealing the time machine from Rittenhouse. They bought and paid for the time machine.
Yeah, and their bad guy who was going back and changing time is actually going to be working with them, because he's the one who was trying to stop Rittenhouse.
His methods are terrible, but
yeah,
that's the ER guy, right?
Yeah.
Is that what he's from?
Yeah. Goran Vizhny.
It's so Timeless. In the first season, I felt like they were leaning away from some of the mythology stuff and just being a little too cutesy of the week, and it just wasn't. I wanted them to deal after that first episode revelation that they had screwed up something.
Yeah, we wanted
more
of that.
And made her sister vanish.
Yeah.
I wanted this to just go off the rails and make it absolute, like, hey, your history degree, fucking useless now.
Yeah.
Utterly useless now.
Right, because you've changed history.
And so now you should have to justify why they should even keep you in this project. And like, but I want to save my sister. Like, well, we don't care about that, and you're a useless historian because you changed the past. I thought that would have been an amazing, like, arc break. And instead, they just kind of kept giving me these cute adventures of the week. I think when they got brought back, or when they found out they were going to live, they got a couple extra episodes in the season.
I think so too, yeah.
Because the way season one ends, arcs directly into that mythology thing with Rittenhouse.
Yeah.
And then season two starts up with this idea that instead of going back to try to mess with key events, that was really never a smart plan, because that never really made sense as a – that's really not quite how history is going to work. instead, what Rittenhouse is doing in season two is so much bigger and creepier that I really love the villain's plan. They've been sending people back to live in the past for decades. I mean, like, to go stay in the past for decades.
Right.
So that, like, you go to 1800 and you rise up in the ranks of the military then. So that, like, they don't go back and do one thing in Detroit in 1950. They go back to 1920 and make sure that they run Detroit in
1950. Take this sports almanac.
Yes.
Basically.
Go back in time.
So that, so that in 1960, when we need Vegas, you run it.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean,
a cool idea.
The second episode does the thing where it's like the guy who's going to win in history, it wins the Darlington 500. Mm-hmm. Is a Rittenhouse operative, and then they basically have to fuck up time because they can't let that guy win because they know that's what Rittenhouse wants.
Like, this is how they have this much seamless power.
So they are going through. They're going the method of this season seems to be let's go mess up time.
They also have now brought in at the end of this episode to the guy who is going to be Rittenhouse's new big bad, the new head of Rittenhouse, who is Lucy's
great-grandfather?
Great-great-grandfather. And he's basically an amoral psychopath with this insane Asmodeus view of history and is like – it's wonderful. Like, I love this Adrian Vett.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's a great bad guy because, like I said, he's amoral. He's a big thinker, and he's a guy from the past, but he doesn't – and they make hay of that. They talk about how he wants – I forget what all the certain.
He keeps infuriating them. He like he wants a Victrola, and he gives them a list of songs for it, and there's pickled
like,
eggs.
He's like, "Don't give me an iPod. I don't know what this machine is. I don't know. An iPod is no good to him. He wants Victrola. He wants what he knows. He wants old technology."
Yeah,
this show sounds like it has enough of the crazy shit I want from a time travel show.
Yeah.
So maybe I should jump back in.
I would. I also think the lead characters they did a good job of. I mean, Rufus was always great. He's the guy from Better Off Dead.
Yes,
he's fantastic. Lucy is Abigail Spencer from the award-winning show whose name I'm blanking on.
Suits.
That show did not win awards.
But she's from Suits.
Best Suits Award, I guess.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
No, it's the show about the guy who goes to death row and then gets out, and I forget what it's called. And I'm embarrassed to have forgotten.
Rectify,
thank you. And she's fantastic in that, and she's really good here. The thing that impresses me is the guy who plays Wyatt. Because that guy should be the boring white guy.
And at the start of season one, he was. He was a sack of flour they dragged through time.
But they've done a good job of sort of deepening him and making him more interesting. And then this latest episode where they reveal that like he used to smuggle drugs or alcohol or something and his dad was a bootlegger.
He looks over at him at one point and it's like, not alcohol, like drugs. Like he used to run.
He's like, something was a little harder.
Mule across the border. They all look at him. He's like, you never asked.
Yeah. And he's like fanboying out over these racers, and we get little things like that where he used to be like the professional military man all the time, and they let him cut loose a little bit, and he's become a much more interesting character.
There was an episode in season one where he and Malcolm Goodwin, I believe, is the actor's Rufus. I think go back to the '80s, and they try to stop their villain, their first season villain's parents from meeting.
Yeah,
of like, okay, fine, you won't let me just shoot him.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go back and make sure his mom and dad just don't meet.
Yeah.
And I was like, it made for a cute episode that was going about an incredibly cold thing. Yeah.
At least they're not killing a baby.
But like they get to have this like wacky madcap 80s episode, but the whole time, like, it's a Heart of Darkness kind of like, man, you know, you're going to a real, real dark place by doing this. Right. And like cock-blocking somebody's parents in time is really, really, really weird. And after that episode, like, Wyatt kind of had his break moment at the end of it of like, what am I doing here? What am I willing to do here?
Yeah, yeah. I think Mike alluded to it's not Future Man. It's
no.
Future Man. Is Future Man the best time travel show of all the shows we had recently?
It's my favorite right now.
I think it's my favorite right now.
And then Travelers and then Timeless?
Yes,
I like Travelers,
and then nothing, and then the one that went off the air that was
no, you've got a lot before then. Yeah,
are you talking about the Jack the Ripper one?
Yes, that was a terrible mistake.
Time after time, no, because Frequency was around.
Oh, right, I guess that counts as time travel. I forgot about that. Yeah,
I still saw a thing just today that was a meme that was going around of like. That there should be a time travel show where you understand that there's a budget to your costume folks. And then like, you know, you have a, like, no, Deborah, there's a 1 month advance notice rule for anything pre-1900s. You know what? Go as a peasant this time. Go as a peasant. Like, I'm not making you a sword. Oh yeah. I'm just going to hand paint silk. That's cool.
All right, moving on to Netflix. Let's talk about Love. Not the concept, but also the concept. But the show, Love, which is by – it's a Judd Apatow joint, but I don't think he's just – created by – Paul Rust is the lead actor and also the guy doing a lot of the writing.
Yeah.
So he's like the main creative force behind
it?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he's at least a producer on it and star in it.
There's several – I mean, there's a whole writer's room or anything, but he's like the – I think he's essentially the showrunner. So, Mike, have you seen all of it? Did you watch all of this?
Nope. I'm going to play the part of a listener who wants to be sold on this show.
So have you watched any of it?
I've watched like a few episodes in season one. I love Judd Apatow.
Yeah.
I thought of this as kind of one of his minor works, so I haven't really dived into it that much.
Okay.
But tell me this. Apatow is also involved with one of my favorite new comedy shows, which is Crashing, the Pete Holmes show.
Yep.
So how does that relate? Like, is this better than that? Or?
Oh, man. That's
it's definitely different than Crashing.
Yeah.
But I've had – I only recently got turned on to Crashing and just binged through the whole first season and really enjoyed it. And I same with Love. Like, I didn't watch almost any of the first season for the longest time. And hearing season three came out, I went, oh, crap, I got to catch up on that. And so now I'm almost done with season two, and it's hysterical. Like, when it's on, it's really on. And
I love them both for different reasons, and I don't know which I would choose if I had to choose one.
It occasionally deals with some really surprising stuff.
Well, I mean, they get deep into the addiction issues that
Daniel Stern turning up as her dad in season two.
Yeah.
She's not Britta, damn it.
She is Mickey Dobbs.
Yeah, Mickey.
Gillian Jacobs. The thing I found most interesting about Love is that I could hate most of these characters. Like, there is only one character in the show who I don't hate at some point in time, and that is Birdie.
Please let it be Birdie.
Of course, it's Birdie. Birdie's the best character.
Well, you're okay with hating the other characters?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sometimes
they are terrible.
So it's like you're the worst.
Kind of, yeah, and that's a good comparison, actually. Got elements if you're the worst.
There's a cheating storyline, but they don't have the other person find out.
Yeah, it just goes that way.
It just, the other person just lives with it, and nobody tells the other.
You know, it's funny, they do another cheating story in season three. You haven't seen this
yet, but
it's with Birdie. But they do it in such a way that I'm like, yeah, Randy deserved that shit. I don't. There is no point at which I feel like she was cheating, and she feels guilty the entire time. But there is no point at which I feel like Birdie was wrong, because she is such the pure and innocent character in all of this. Her sort of Australian accent and her sort of naivete around everybody else.
She's constantly just taking advantage of it. Job, yep. Like, you can tell Birdie anything, like you know, hey, my mom's flying into town tomorrow, so you have to cover me for work, then like you can spend the whole day posting on your Instagram where she can see it, that you're hanging out at the beach, and like Birdie will still probably roll with it.
She's solid.
Yeah. But yeah, Gus, I mean, Mickey has huge addiction issues. Sex addiction, cigarettes, alcohol, like everything. And so she causes all kinds of havoc. Gus is, I don't know, he's like the quintessential nice guy in some ways. Like, and sometimes he actually is a nice guy, but sometimes he's the quote unquote nice guy who's just thinks that because he is trying to be a good person that he can't be shitty to other people. And he's shitty to other people all the time.
There's once in season two where she's admitting her addiction issues and talking about like the start of season two, I think. Talking about like, I need to not be in a relationship. I am in AA and I am in a sex and love addiction, like relationship addiction program as well. And I want to stay friends with you, but I can't be with anyone for a year. And because it's like a heartfelt, really powerful moment, he leans in and kisses her at the end of it.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where I went, ah, fuck, this show is going to go there. Because, I mean, sitcoms do this. Shows do this all
the
time.
It's not a Love Conquers
like,
All moment. Yeah.
Shows, okay, shows say, undercut their message like this all the time.
See, what's and, the point of view? And
yeah, no, she leans back and goes, what the fuck, man? Okay. I literally just told you no, and your response, and he just like, oh, God, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Because for just a moment, I was like, you sons of bitches.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. They don't really do the romantic thing. In fact, season three, For the most part, Mickey and Gus are in relationships the whole time. They're I mean, they have some pretty knockdown, drag-out fights, but they are in a relationship, and the assumption is that they are going down that road, that they're getting more serious. And they have spoilers, there is a happy ending, but it's a happy ending I buy. And I don't think it's a happy ending where we're like, okay,
these guys... How much did you pay for the happy ending you bought, Randy?
You know, I don't pay for my happy endings.
So this is you get the free happy ending. So
that's right.
This is the happy ending to the entire series, right?
Yeah, because it's season three, third season, which I'm a little disappointed by because I think there was plenty more to milk out of this. I don't know if Apatow wanted to move on, if one of the cast members wanted to move on, but I feel like they easily could have gone on with this, and I'm kind of surprised they did wrap it.
I was really shocked to find out that this would be it because this is the kind of sitcom that could roll for years.
Oh yeah, but it's a really satisfying final season. Also, Iris Apatow plays Aria Hopkins, the young teenager. I didn't realize that was, I don't know, Apatow's daughter maybe?
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. She was in This Is 40. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's actually really funny.
She's great here as this sort of spoiled teen actress. And she's in this show called Wichita.
I had no idea that that was Apatow's kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yo, no, I want a Wichita shirt, man.
Wichita is such awesome. It's like a... Charm type show.
It's a supernatural ripoff.
Yeah, they're awesome. they're witches
like
in Kansas, and in the third season they've done this big revamp of it, and her character suddenly is like sidelined because they've brought in all these hot teenagers. Obviously, been sort of a CW remake. There's a little bit because he works as a teacher on a set of a movie or a show, and then he's doing his own movie. There's a little bit of that Hollywood inside making jokes about Hollywood too, and it works pretty well. Apatow's got a bit of a – he's done that before, and he does it well.
Yeah, they have David Spade play her showbiz dad.
What?
He comes in every once in a while. He always wants her to do
– Does he play David Spade?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Okay. Like, he always wants her to do like the blockbuster movies, and her mom always wants to do the indie movie.
Yeah.
It's always done pretty well.
Also, we can't get out of the show without mentioning Brett Gelman, who is Dr. Greg Coulter, Mickey's boss, and probably the most reprehensible character on the show. Like, he has his moments, but most of the time he is terrible and hilariously so.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, there's a darkness to that dude's comedy that like, it's in every role he does. He's like Rob Hubel. Like, there's just something, like, mean with you, man. And I can't think of the actress' name, the blonde woman that plays Mickey's other boss.
Oh yeah, I forget. Her
I will
name
forever.
Too.
She's in Kimmy Schmidt. She's on the board of the football teams, and I will forever remember her. Like anytime I see her in anything now, I just picture her like when they're having to stand for the anthem. She in Kimmy Schmidt. She tears her shirt open and has a Stars and Stripes bra. Like she's constantly smoky, but like. They don't have a flag and the anthem's playing and like the whole room of conservatives is like twitching and freaking out and like she tears her shirt open and they all turn and like hand over their heart. And now like I see her in other roles that have nothing to do with that and I just can't. It's all I can see.
All right. I definitely recommend Love and it's, you know, half-hour comedy. You can get through that.
Yeah, in peak TV where there's a million new kind of half-bitter sitcoms, Love is shockingly good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Adding to the queue.
Finally, speaking of adding to the queue, this was not originally on the show plan for this week, but you guys, Mike talked it up. I've been hearing people talk it up, and that is the new Queer Eye on Netflix.
It's wonderful. It's everything I wanted Sarah Silverman's show to be.
Did you guys ever watch the old Queer Eye?
Yeah. I watched at least the first season.
This was back when Netflix mailed me DVDs.
Yeah,
I think.
It was. I think it was pre 2005. It was like 2002, maybe 2003. It was a long time ago.
I don't.
Oh, go ahead.
They mailed everybody DVDs. It wasn't just me. It wasn't just you.
I shared them to everyone else. I remailed everyone's
that
Netflix
was you?
DVDs. You're welcome.
Oh.
You're so much younger then. This is a great show. The marketing was a little obnoxious for this one, but I remember having fond memories about the original Queer Eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave it a shot, and I'm so glad I did because not only is it a really good makeover show, but it talks about – it creates this space for these guys to have these conversations about political and social issues that are going on right now that they otherwise would not have had with these people. And I love that it's in Georgia.
Yeah.
That it's not place. It's not in New York like the original one was.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's in the heartland. I think that was a deliberate move.
They're going to like Macon, Georgia and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a deliberate move, but it was a smart one. Mm-hmm. And
Georgia also gives breaks like crazy right now.
Yeah, that's
a big shot in Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that helped too.
Yeah, not by accident.
But, you know, I like all the personalities on the show. I like all the hosts. And it's very heartfelt. It's very much about, and this is carried on from the original Queer Eye, but it seems to be more of a focus here where it's about trying to bring out the best in a person and the idea that a shared life in community is a deeper, more fulfilling life than when you spend alone. Because a lot of their clients just kind of –
They're longer people. Yeah. They've settled into a time where they're okay. What's interesting to me about this, I never watched the show. I write off a lot of reality sight unseen.
Yeah, me too.
And so everybody started talking about how good this was, and I was like, I don't get this. But I started watching it. I watched the first episode, and I had to stop. I was like, God damn, this is really good. Like, it's really affecting.
Mm-hmm.
And going into this, I am fairly much, pretty much a slob. I'm a t-shirts and jeans guy. Like, I could definitely go with a Queer Eye makeover. I'm a guy who hates fashion shaming. I'm a guy who hates – I don't have any hair to mess with. Like, none of this stuff is for me. Like, the notion of a like someone coming in and telling you – that sounded hostile to me. It did not sound uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion of telling you how you, you know, they're going to change your space and how you live. They're going to change how you eat. That is all the stuff that I find very personal and I love. And the notion of someone coming in and changing all that to make my world better is fucking terrifying. But then you see this, and what they've done is they go in and they look at what the person is doing and they try to find a sort of a better version of it for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you open with this guy. I'm just talking about the first episode because it's – this guy is this sort of adorable, older, rednecky dad who's been through three divorces – who eats the same burrito every day.
Oh, we should with the Mountain Dew.
We should have made those redneck margaritas.
Man.
Tequila, wait. Mountain Dew.
So he's got his whole backyard set up so that he can sit out on the porch with the door open and see the TV and watch the TV. It's like, oh yeah, I'm related to you, dude.
Yeah, I was with them. I'm like, this guy reminds me. I have a friend and her dad is like, he's like such an old redneck, but he's such a great guy. And I'm like, yeah, I've seen this guy and I like him. I see why he probably has three ex-wives and all that kind of stuff.
Recliner chair.
But when you see them like start to make modifications to him, you're worried they're going to turn him into something he's not. But no, they just like – they clean him up a little bit. They clean up his space. The bit where he has his third ex-wife who he still kind of loves and they clearly are still like
– Oh, yeah.
They don't – you know, he's too old to have a friend with benefits, but that's 100% what they are.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty clear.
Separated her life from him but still loves him.
And so – they get to do this whole Romeo Juliet thing. And I know it's reality and I know it's a little bit scripted, but they get to this whole Romeo Juliet thing where you're like pulling for them to get together. And they do the big date at the end and it's really affecting. Even as I know it's being manipulated for the cameras, I am 100% pulled into it.
Me too.
So it's the fact that they put somebody in the role of life makeover,
yeah.
Like attitude,
mm-hmm. Like
culture.
Culture.
He's a culture expert, but he's really the therapist.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Ferramo, I think. Yeah. Is his name.
Ferramo.
That could have been as silly and useless as Hart on Captain Planet, but it is incredible. Like, it makes the show work for me because makeovers are a thing for a reason. Like, there's always some bare minimum level of interest in like watching somebody go from like zero to hero.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Extreme Makeovers has the, you know, move that bus and the house and everything. But this feels better and more honest to me than Extreme Makeover. It feels less Kmart brand or Sears branded or whatever.
Yeah.
And a huge part of it is that they feel like they address the fact that it's difficult to change everything about your life in one move. And mm-hmm. that I kind of know that this is scripted for reality and that there's a good chance that these people – I always think at the start of these people won't keep this up. Like, even if you get them to transform it for this episode, like, you bought him a bunch of clothes, but will he do this?
Right.
I get a real feeling by the end of these episodes that they are conscious of making sure that the person can do these things, that they see why they're doing these things, and that they seem to make sure that the person feels like it's helping them.
Yeah,
I
agree.
They make the change manageable.
There's
somebody.
A moment where the person chooses to change.
Yes. Yeah. And also there's an episode where It's a guy who has six kids and a wife, and they have
great.
A tiny house, and he works two jobs because the wife can't work. And it's like, okay, well, they're going to take him to this fancy store and give him clothes he can't afford. They take him to Target, and they teach him how to shop for his body on the cheap at Target. And he looks great so he can sustain that.
He looks amazingly better. I mean, they also knocked that house out of the park. But yeah, like the transformation from like rag – he works like two or three jobs, sleeps like 2 hours a night, runs a
kid. Eyes all bloodshot.
Holy crap. Yeah. That was also really affecting for their house and garden guy – who was also raised very heavy in the church in the South, but had a very bad coming out, it sounds like.
Because in the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have a really wonderful, and I think they're building raised beds and have a wonderful discussion where he looks over at the dad and like just cold asks him, you know, so how are you with us, with me?
How are you, Georgia man who grew up in a Christian church?
Yeah.
How do you feel about gay people?
Taking all six of your kids to church, all the like yeah. You guys are big in your church community. Where do you stand on this?
That's what I was saying earlier. They have an open and honest conversation about the subject. And later on, just this client, this Christian conservative man, allowing these five gay men into his life to make a change in his life, to make his life better, is so affecting to him and his family. It brought tears to my eyes. And he's crying. And he literally looks at all of them and says, you know, I grew up thinking gay people were wrong and bad and crazy and stupid. But you know what? I'm a Christian. I love God. But you guys, I love you. You are great people and you are welcome in my home. Yeah. And whatever, you know, bad things that people in the church say about you, they're wrong.
The man in the first episode breaks down crying and says, I love you guys.
Oh, that one's
yes.
And I had a moment of like, That's just not the demographic that would randomly hug five gay guys in his backyard.
Yeah.
And not like Southern, can you be reasonable with your gayness gay?
No,
like,
no.
Like hired for Queer Eye Gay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the second episode.
You auditioned with a bunch of other gay guys and they picked you five.
Yeah. The second episode where the guy is like, doesn't like being touched.
Yeah.
He's this sort of huggy guy.
The transformation for him is amazing.
It's amazing.
I related to that guy a lot.
That guy, I'm just going to say, he is Jason Mantzoukas. You can't get that in your head.
Oh, my God.
He's Jason Mantzoukas.
But when they have the moment where his barrier breaks down a little bit because he's so defensively jokey that he was the one where I really thought he's not going to do it. He's not going to do anything that they want to do. And they call him out on it when he break, like he gushes about something. Mm-hmm. And one of them goes, man, this is the most eye contact you've made with us this entire time that we've been here.
Yeah.
And you can see him realize it too of like, I feel better. And that's when he starts, by the end, he admits that like, I've been in a hole and I didn't realize it.
Yeah.
You see the healing in every episode and it's healing to watch.
At the end of that one, he has a girl walk up to him at his app thing and give him a kiss. And like they clearly – and he stayed mum's the word on that the whole time. He never mentioned – they all sit in the room and are like, who the fuck?
Who's this girl?
I was like, man, way to play it close to the vest. But you could tell that like
– was that him or the comedian? That happened with the comedian
as
well.
I think it might happen to the comedian. I think it might have been the comedian. Mm-hmm. We're just like, oh, man, you had this in your back pocket the whole time. Like, you were so nervous about whether or not this transformation would work that you didn't bring her up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I will say, I hit a bit of a speed bump in the third episode.
Oh, who was that?
That was the Trump voting cop.
Oh, man. Talk about a tense fucking car ride.
That opening. And the thing is, here's the thing that I have a problem with. That was a setup.
Mm-hmm.
They know – I mean, they're acting like they're scared, but they know what's going on because the cameras are on the whole time. Mm-hmm. And that's irresponsible. I feel like that's playing a thing that is very serious. Like, they're talking about – he's like, you can't just – I know cops like this. You know, you can't do that to a black man. And I'm like, yeah, you fucking can't. And you did. You guys did it by doing that on TV and playing it off like it's a joke. You can all – no, it is not okay.
Because the culture guy brings it up later of like when he has to hang out with the best friend for a day where he – Or hang out with the guy for a day where he says like, yeah, man, when we did that opening, I was thinking, great, this is just – I'm just going to die on my television show.
Yeah.
Great.
That was not okay. Like, and I feel like anybody who voted for Pence maybe doesn't deserve help from the gays. But, you know,
that's the great thing about this show because it's trying to break down those barriers on a very small scale on a one-to-one basis, but it's still doing it and it's televised. And if the right people watch it, that could be pretty healing to the culture.
Well, it is. I'll go back to it. It didn't like get me to throw the remote at the TV or anything. But it gets back to what Les said earlier about Sarah Silverman's show. Sarah Silverman's show, I got to fuck you within like the first 20 minutes of that show.
Yeah, I was mad.
Oh, or her new Hulu show?
Her Let's Go Talk to Trump Voters and Make Everything Okay.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't have any of this.
You didn't just stab me on the doorstep? Well, we're cool.
Yeah. This they actually do talk about – it's a little less than nuanced and it's a little – surface. It's the kind of talk you'd have at a cocktail party. Like, I don't feel like attitudes are necessarily changed when they talk about some things.
It doesn't go too deep.
It doesn't go too deep, but I was like, okay, but we are trying to reach the level we should be of the can we communicate with each other still? And I thought that they did that pretty well, even though I had some issues in episode three with that.
I don't want just one show trying to – I mean, I don't want one of these shows gone. Like, I don't want just one show trying to communicate like this.
Yeah.
I just feel that
– this did
I feel
it
Queer Eye is actually doing what the Silverman show is trying to do a little – maybe a little slower and less efficient, but better. I feel like the original Queer Eye did a ridiculous amount to make – the idea of gayness, not the craziest fucking thing you'd ever heard.
I mean, mm-hmm. that's the big difference, isn't it? Yeah. The Queer Eye originally, and they talk about that in the intro. That,
like,
that
I really think that subtly, that subtly got you used to seeing gay characters, gay people.
Yeah.
You know, even though it was ramped up a little bit for reality TV, this idea that like gayness could touch your straight life and it not destroy it or be the weird like.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't fucking radioactive to meet a gay person or something.
Yeah.
And I feel like bringing this back now could have that same kind of subtle, like, it's silly, it's reality TV or whatever, but I really hope that we'll look back in, like, 10 or 15 years and go, hey, I think that helped help move it along.
Yeah,
I meant to bring it up earlier during our discussion of Rise, but of all the sweet, heartfelt, oh my God, so on your sleeve moments they did.
Yeah.
The trans representation.
Yeah, it's really good.
That actually brought a tear to my eye.
That was really
Michael,
good.
Every way that they've handled that, him asking her, I'm sorry, him asking him, where do you want to change?
And
then say, you know, I don't want a special place to change.
Yeah.
Like, well, do you want me to go talk to the guys who knew? I'll go handle it.
Not corny, not sappy. Handled with nuance and respect.
And not the central plot of anything.
No, it's
just there.
It's just
there.
A scene.
Yeah. It's just there. I will say halfway through, I went, so instead of Glee, this is just Glum.
That's amazing.
Anyway.
Right. Before we get off Queer Eye and take a break and go to questions, do you guys have a favorite amongst the people?
Oh, I thought you might,
ask.
I really like Tan because
I love Tan.
He's the guy who takes everybody shopping for clothes.
Mm-hmm.
His hair is immaculate.
Yes.
And his style is cool and he's funny and charming. But I got to say, I love Jonathan. I'm in love with Jonathan.
Oh, man. Jonathan.
Not only does he make
the
show so much
he's
fun.
He's the groomer.
He's the groomer
the
with long
hair,
the long hair.
Okay.
He's the gay Jesus.
Yes, gay Jesus.
Yeah. Not only does he make the show really, really fun, but I am like just inspired by how comfortable he is in his skin.
Yeah.
He's so great to watch. So, Jonathan.
Anthony is my
really?
Favorite.
Really? The food guy?
Yeah. And which is ironic because I really could give a shit about food and don't care about cooking at all. But –
you just like all the Strokes t-shirts he has.
Right.
Every episode, a brand new Strokes t-shirt.
Yeah. He's every scene, like he manages to either crack me up or say the right thing. Or also his – for being the food guy, he's had some he has some amazingly heartfelt moments with their people.
Yeah. Well, Tan is also my favorite. And then Jonathan's probably right behind him. But I do want to mention the other two, which is Bobby, who is the interior design guy.
That guy's a genius.
And he's amazing at his job.
And Bobby's the one that has the moment with the raised beds, talking about growing up in church, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Karamo, I think, we talked earlier, is sort of the psychologist. And he is the guy who – he or the therapist. He's the guy who sort of gets in there and gets a lot of the good moments.
I really, really thought he was just going to cold ask out the other cop. the Dolph the Dolph Lundgren looking
like,
dude.
He takes his shirt off.
It's like,
it's
oh,
all
shit.
Forgiven.
And the firefighter.
Oh, that's right. No, it was the firefighter one. It was the
he kept calling him Superman.
That's right. Yeah, it was the firefighter, not the cop. It was the firefighter.
So he's got a type.
Yeah.
All right. That wraps up our discussion for the week. We'll be back in just a second with some questions. We'll be right back. right. We got listener questions. Every week, we put up a post on Facebook, usually on Mondays, that asks, tells you who's going to be on the show, tells you what shows we're going to be talking about, and asks you what questions you have for us. Sometimes they're about the episodes of the week. Sometimes they're very strange. And we will answer all of them starting right now.
They're typically very strange. As a listener, I would say they're very strange.
So first up, we got Michael Gustini, who says, hey, dudes. Pacific Rim Uprising marks the film debut of noted TV showrunner Stephen S. DeKnight, Spartacus, Daredevil Season 1. What other showrunners would you like to see be given the keys to a blockbuster franchise, and what would you want to see them do with it? To make things more interesting, let's remove the Marvel movies from consideration. Anybody got an answer for this?
Yeah. I read this before. I thought about this.
Okay.
I would call for a mashup. So I would want a new version of Tron.
Okay.
From Charlie Brooker, the creator of Black Mirror, because I think he could really do some kind of deep, fucked up, you know, shit with the idea of living in a, you know, constructed alternate reality universe like Tron.
Mm-hmm.
Also would look cool. But the mashup part would be I would like him to team up with you guys watch Halt and Catch Fire?
Yeah.
Yes.
From the co-creators of that show.
Oh, because, yeah, very 80s. Yeah.
Yes, very 80s. And also not just that, but those guys know how to make you care about characters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And write really emotional storylines. So I think it would be a good mashup of some really mind-fucking sci-fi, some great visuals, mm-hmm. and 80s references, and just some deep character work. So,
yeah.
Neutron.
All right.
My answer is pretty easy. I'd like to see Javier Grillo Marktwatch be put in charge of like a Fifth Element level crazy ass space franchise.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Like something just truly just screwball.
You know what?
Flash Gordon reboot.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Flash Gordon. It's got to be something because like Star Wars and Star Trek are taken.
Yeah.
But there's got to be something. Flash Gordon's not a bad idea. Javi doing a Flash Gordon like a
I'm,
world.
I'm blanking on my sci-fi authors right now, but like some Piers Anthony level goofiness. Like Terry Pratchett Discworld, like something like that. Like let Javi run on that.
Netflix should have given him the Lost in Space redo.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been cool if they would kit you with it.
I've seen him post some about that. I think he's actually friends with the folks that got that. But yeah, I would have. He'd have nailed that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I want Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland to do something like Fifth Element, but with their own Rick and Morty-esque spin on it.
I like how we all pick sci-fi shit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I was trying to think like drama. Like, I don't want Shonda Rhimes to go do movies. I don't care. That doesn't.
Yeah. Now, Noah Hawley could go do whatever.
Yeah, Noah Hawley could do whatever he wants. Yeah.
Honestly, it does not matter the genre. Just put that dude in charge of it, and I'm sure it'll be fine.
If he wants to do some kind of finger puppet show that he puts on YouTube, Red, I'm going to watch that.
Noah Hawley's Real Rob.
Oh, my God. It'd probably be great.
It would be good.
All right. Jonathan Huffnagel, everybody settle in.
Oy, get comfy.
Welcome back, TV dudes. I recently tried to reconnect some indie movies to a hesitant coworker. I was recommending The Way, Way Back, which it seems none of my friends have seen. And you guys seen it?
Nope.
Yeah, it's good.
I have not seen it, but I kind of want to. His response was that he may try if I watched Inherent Vice first. This is a movie I vaguely recall mixed reviews.
I have seen Inherent Vice.
Mm-hmm. The trailer seems a bit wild and interesting, though I recall that Martin Thomas found it a struggle to get through. After sorting through such mixed reviews, I have a suspicion my coworker is setting me up, but he seems to genuinely like the movie. I am left neutral, but confused whether I should watch it or not.
Yeah, it's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Watch it.
I enjoyed the movie. I love Paul Thomas Anderson. It's not one of my favorite P.T. Anderson movies, but the worst Paul Thomas Anderson movie is still an amazing film to sit through.
So the question is, do you have any insight into this sort of conflict? What things have people tried to get you to watch that most others think suck? What things were they so convinced of hidden value they wanted to prove to others? And did you get what they see in it? Since you guys watch a lot of hiss or miss junk and gems as part of the show, I wonder what you miss that others try to bring to your attention later or what you may be advocating to others.
Stuff gets ruined for me really easily.
Yeah.
Like, there's a super hype level on almost anything where I will suddenly just not want to see. I've not seen Shape of Water.
Oh, really? Just because of the hype?
At this point, I'm good. I don't know that I'll see it. Like,
you know, you're probably good. I liked it, but yeah, you're good.
I've had enough people tell me that, like, oh, no, it's a beautiful film. It's the most simple story I've ever set through. The fact that I cared about it probably makes it deserve a best picture.
That's fair.
Also heard that they unfairly kill a cat. Someone called it Grinding Nemo, and I can never unhear it.
I
Well, there is
but
a,
anyways,
there
so
is
yeah,
a fish man
gets,
dick.
Stuff gets hyped and ruined. Like, Game of Thrones is burnt for me. I've tried three different times to get into it. But at this point, it's not just that I had a hard time getting into it. It's that there's no in between. Like, people are like, no, it's amazing. I'm like, I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons since I was a kid. It's just medieval shit.
No, less at this point, you need to wait till it's over and watch it all in reverse.
Yeah. Right, right.
And it becomes happier and happier as it goes along.
Sean Payne lives.
There's a couple shows, two big shows I can think of. One is Queer Eye that I would never have watched if you guys hadn't told me, and I really liked. Yeah. And the other one on the opposite end of the spectrum is The Wire, which took me, I think, three tries to get into before I fell in love with it. Because I've watched the first couple episodes, and I'm like, all these characters, what's going on? I don't care. It's so dire. It's not for me. And eventually, of course, fell completely in love with the show.
I would not have watched Rise if it wasn't for you guys.
Yeah.
So thank you. It was the show on the list for tonight's episode that we're doing that had the least episodes aired. So I was like, I can get through that.
Yeah.
So I watched it. I enjoyed it. I'm usually the guy recommending shit that people don't like to other people.
Like what?
I can think of a movie. You guys see Monkey Bone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know of
Brendan
it.
Fraser.
Never seen it.
A lot of people are like, fuck that movie. That looks really stupid. That movie is fucking great.
It's crazy.
Isn't
it? Balls out crazy.
Yeah, it's really fun.
If you've not seen Monkey Bone since it first came out, when it was supposed to be whatever came after George of the Jungle for him.
Right, right.
And it so wasn't that
It's so subversive
That's
and weird.
Chris Kattan.
I mentioned it earlier in this episode, Great News on NBC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, nobody seems to watch it. It's so subversive and funny.
I feel like that show is dead between 30 Rock and Kimmy Schmidt. Like,
right.
It sits so perfectly.
Yes.
And I've recommended to a bunch of people who went, yeah, it's cute.
Grant hates it.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I can see that.
I really hate recommending sitcoms to people because humor is more subjective even than, like, heartfelt, you know, family stuff. I find LA to Vegas fucking hysterical. Like,
I hate LA to Vegas.
Pause and rewind like bits of it all the time.
Haven't seen, but I've actually heard good things.
But I have a love for the same way that, like, there's always going to be a spot for a police procedural on TV. There's always going to be a spot for a doctor or hospital show on TV. There's always going to be a sitcom.
Yeah.
And there's now a couple of different kinds of sitcom. There's the kind of this is more story, the, you know, casual stuff like that where, yeah, it's a sitcom, but there's a lot more going on. And then there's Wings and Cheers and Night Court and Caroline in the City, like all those kind of sitcoms. And I feel like LA to Vegas just aims for that and nails
it. Okay, fair enough.
Oh, cool.
The show that I'm kind of surprised I have to talk people into is The Good Place.
Really?
Like, all of us. We all know, and the people we know are all Good Place fans. But you talk to anyone who just like casually watches TV or even watches a fair amount of TV, and I say, you guys watch The Good Place, and I'll hear like, no, what's that? Or, no, that looked dumb.
I've explained the premise to people and them gone, that doesn't sound like a show for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone I've turned on to it has fallen in love with it and binged through it.
You know what? That's okay because that reminds me of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
When it first came out, if you told people to watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
oh, yeah.
Fuck you. That sounds stupid. And that's for kids. And that'll be off the air in 2 months.
Yeah.
7 seasons, one of the most influential shows ever.
Season 2 started and my roommate was taking martial arts. And his karate class, like his martial arts class, basically like stopped one evening so that like they could go watch Buffy. Because season 2, like the fight choreography jumped.
Yes.
And they were all like, no, we all loved this show. But now the whole group wants just this show. And they came home and was like, so we're watching this thing called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Now it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So that became like a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Alec Miracle says, dudes, I always wondered what the Dharma beer in Lost tasted like, especially 30 years after it was produced and sitting in an abandoned Volkswagen in the tropical sun.
I wondered that, too.
What is a hoppy beer? Malty? A light beer? I guess we'll never know, except Sawyer and gin. And he says, what's your guys' favorite beer? Mine is Leinenkugel's Snowdrift Vanilla Porter. Grant Davis, reporting from Vegas here, chimes in to say, it was the 70s. It tasted like a shitty Coors Light.
That's exactly true. In Lost, when they open that beer off the front seat of that van, and that's the first thing I thought was, y'all have not been on this island long enough to put up with whatever skunked bullshit is in that van. But he's right. Yeah. I feel like it's got to taste like the beer in Repo Man. Like all of
beer?
The, yeah, beer. And that's all actually Ralph's generic.
Oh, okay.
So that's a Ralph's product.
Ralph's. But
yeah, I assume it just tastes like flat Coors Light or like Billy Beer or
what is that beer in the movie Desperado? Piss Warm Chungo.
Piss Warm Chungo. Yeah, it is the worst beer you can imagine, but it's the only beer on the desert island.
Yes.
Do you guys have a favorite beer?
I don't drink beer, But I will recommend Austin East Ciders.
Me too. I'm in the same boat. Okay. I don't drink beer, but I love Austin East.
Cool. Ciders. I got a gluten thing, so.
Oh man. You know. They also do a bunch of different flavors. Like I really like their pineapple.
Yes.
And their blood orange, and I feel like there's a new one coming out.
There is. I don't remember what,
I don't know
it,
what
is.
It is either.
There's
but
a local
fantastic.
Brewery called I think Blue Owl makes one called Little Boss that I really like. It's a sour session beer, and then there's a one from I think Austin Beer Works called Einhorn, but I believe it's seasonal. And
what
I like
are you
it as
what
well.
Are you drinking now, Liz?
This is Live Oak Hefeweizen, which was it's a Bavarian style of Weissbier.
By the way, I don't drink beer, but I like the word Hefeweizen.
Me too. I'm gonna name my first kid Hefeweizen.
I've already got two kids, I'm not having any more. I guess I'll name my next dog Hefeweizen.
There you go.
Ken Benes says, so recently I was asked what video game I thought would work as a TV series, and I had time to start thinking about it, and I thought XCOM would make a good TV series, but instead of a solid story, make it an anthology of a group of soldiers fighting aliens. So my question to you is, what tabletop or video game could make a good series? That's a great question. Bye. Have you guys played XCOM? Do you know XCOM?
No.
It is a... Basically, there's an alien invasion, and there's a military, like a United Nations, all the militaries of the world get together and form this Black Ops XCOM unit to take down UFOs and aliens.
Nice.
So it's like Spec Ops
Tom
versus
Clancy's
aliens.
Independence Day.
It's super good. It's one of my favorite games.
What platform?
It's been on – I usually get it on PlayStation, but it was originally a console – or was originally it was on PC, and it's one of the hardest games you've ever played. Like your characters die all the time.
Mm. I will not play that game.
It's super fun.
I'll watch you play it.
Last time I consistently played video games was GoldenEye on the 64.
That's like the worst game ever.
So you think a James Bond TV show.
No, like everything I keep thinking of is like, what's the last game I played? F-Zero? F-Zero would make a shitty TV show.
How about Q-Bert? How about The Adventures of Q-Bert? But it's live action.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
And he's just a guy who – it's actually like a cube. He works in like an office cube.
So like
and
we
he's
get
hopping between we get
Jason like, Mantzoukas as Q-Bert.
I'd watch that.
Actually, I would watch Jason Mantzoukas on Pitfall.
Oh my god!
Oh, shit.
And, so basically, it's just like it's Briscoe County Jr. but Indiana Jones. Yeah. Like, so it's just this endless series of traps that he just has to keep running, and like shit's chasing him.
He's
and there's
like, oh man,
there's treasure along the way, but he can't stop. Yeah,
I'm not jumping on that crocodile's mouth. It's going to open and eat me.
I think Metroid. Would
oh,
make
I'd watch oh, the yeah. shit out of a Metroid
pretty
show.
Fucking cool. Like, yeah. Not only because like I have the 80s, 90s nostalgia there, but it's about a female bounty hunter with a cool-ass exoskeleton fighting space pirates.
And a creepy, yeah. lonely world. Yeah, it's a. Yeah. I really liked Metroid.
I would watch that.
I have two answers. One is I want an animated Overwatch show done by Pixar or something like that immediately. I want all those shorts, but I want an ongoing show.
I would think that's coming because that's
how is that not
I don't
happening.
Know why it hasn't happened. I love that world. I would love more of their – all their shorts are so great. I would love a ongoing story of that. The other one I have is that I would like a Grand Theft Auto series, an anthology series done by Noah Hawley.
Wow.
It jumps from the 80s in Vice City to the modern day of San Andreas. He just does an anthology series set in that world.
I'm thinking, all right, did you see some of the DC shorts, the animated shorts that DC's done, the weirder ones? Like there's a Wonder Woman where she's on a beach and like it's super stylized
Robert
and
Valley.
Shit. Yeah. Like if you let some of the animation teams that are behind like it's the one division of DC that I can point to copy what they're doing.
The only good
it's the
one.
The only one.
All right. Jonathan Habmichael says, hi, dudes. With Love's final season and The Americans' final season coming soon, what highly anticipated final season of a show beat your already high expectations? The only recent series that exceeded my expectation with its final season is Breaking Bad.
Halt and Catch Fire.
Yes, that is my answer.
Man, I need to catch up on
that.
That
is my answer.
Holy shit, good last season.
Yeah, I loved the show, and it kept getting better and better, but I was not prepared for the how emotionally invested I was going to become in those characters.
I've liked and hated nearly every character on that show at some point. Yeah. I've been mad at Gord. Yes. I've been mad at all of them. That final season dealt with his illness. I sat and wept, I think, through the last three episodes.
I
off
sat
and on,
and
like, with my wife going, I don't follow this show. What the fuck? And I'd be good for a few minutes, and then something
Talk
else would happen.
To me
and I'd
half
be like,
an hour.
Somebody's looking at a picture of Gordon. I'm like, God damn it.
Not only did they, like, pay off the storylines for the characters we've been following all the way through. Mm-hmm. But there were a few new characters that got great emotional storylines as well in the final season, like the Gordon's daughter. Yeah.
And it also kept up their already great trend of picking a thing each season and doing an alt reality, like an alt history of it.
Yes.
Because like even though they dealt with all that wrap up of the season or the series finale type stuff, they also went ahead and had their fun with the internet season.
That's right.
Which was just beautiful.
And, you know, I didn't mind that overused Peter Gabriel song at the end.
Did they use Salisbury Hill?
Yes.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
The one I'll go to is The Shield. The Shield was a show that I kept thinking they kept backing him into a corner and they kept doing things and I kept thinking it was going to get ridiculous or mm-hmm. I was going to lose my interest. It never lost my interest. It always was tense. And that final episode remains, I think, my favorite final episode of any show ever. Like, it beats literally any other show. It's got such a great finale, and it just is such a payoff to the entire season.
What did you think about the sequel when Vic Mackey is driving a big rig and he runs over Jax Teller on Sons of Anarchy?
I thought that was weird. I thought it was weird to make Vic Mackey a superhero. I thought that was a strange sequel to go with.
With his family? Yeah.
Yes, with his family. Yeah. That was an odd choice. He goes into witness protection, becomes a superhero. It was a strange call. All right. Final question comes from Ross Brown. He says, I'm soon going to finally get around to watching Breaking Bad for the first time, and something I'm wondering is if you think I might get anything out of watching Better Call Saul first.
Don't do that.
No, I would not, absolutely not. Suggest that.
In fact, I would say that is a hard, fast rule. Whenever something's released as a prequel, don't fall for it.
Never watch the prequel first.
That's not how the creators intend you to watch it.
No, if that prequel was going to get you into this franchise, they'd have done it first.
Yeah, and by the way, that is not to say that Breaking Bad or that Better Call Saul is terrible. No. Better Call Saul is fantastic.
It's great.
But it's impossible for the writers of Better Call Saul to not telegraph shit that will fuck up. I mean,
I feel like the Star Wars prequels are
the best example of this, where if you watch them in chronological order through the prequels, you actually blow the best reveals of Star Wars.
Right.
Like, you see the Darth Vader father thing coming from a mile.
Also, you're watching the prequels, and that's punishment enough.
True. True.
They'll make it sterile.
They can't help it. No matter how, like, I love Better Call Saul, but it's going to telegraph some things at you about Mike Ehrlantraut and stuff that you just don't want to know.
Not only does it telegraph stuff, but part of Better Call Saul, every season, there's a bit that functions as kind of a sequel to Breaking Bad.
There's a framing device, too, that you want to watch out for. Yeah. I would just watch it the way it was created, knowing that the creator found the world they'd built after Breaking Bad delicious enough to go back to, and that's how you should experience it.
And he was right. I didn't think he was right, but he was right.
But you should whet your appetite with Breaking Bad, and then... Yes.
I would say burn through Breaking Bad as fast as you can and get to the nice, slow-burn character story that is Better Call Saul.
Oh, man, because it settles into an awesome thing.
Yeah. Yeah, the TV dudes, in the strongest terms, recommend you do not do this.
No.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for us this week. Thank you, Les. Thank you, Mike, for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me, guys.
And until next time,
TV Dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.